One of the things President Trump is likely to talk about tonight in his State of the Union address is the Middle East. His controversial decision to move the U.S. embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem has worried many experts who believe it'll make a peace deal between Israelis and Palestinians much more difficult. Joining us now is George Mitchell, a longtime Democratic senator and former Senate majority leader. He was also special envoy to Northern Ireland under President Clinton and to the Middle East under President Obama. Senator Mitchell, thanks for joining us. And what do you think about that decision by the president to move the embassy?
There's no doubt about the fact that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel and will be the capital of Israel. The only issue is whether there will ever be a Palestinian capital in East Jerusalem as the capital of an independent Palestinian state. I think the president's action in moving the embassy was premature and unwise because it undermined the very policy which the president himself has been pursuing, consistent with American policy over many decades, and that is to achieve a solution. The only solution I think possible is that of two independent states, but to achieve a solution through negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians. They themselves must sit down, negotiate, and decide their future. And the decision by the president to move the embassy has made getting negotiations much more difficult, and if we ever do get into negotiations, made getting a satisfactory result even more difficult than that.
But not impossible.
Well, nothing's impossible in the world. Times and circumstances change, and certainly there's dramatic change in the Middle East. It's much different from when I was there on my last tour of duty as President Obama's special envoy, and that creates both dangers and opportunities. And I hope very much that the parties will get together, will negotiate, because it really is in the interest of both societies. Israel has a very successful state, but the people of Israel don't have security, reasonable and sustainable security. They live in constant fear and anxiety of attack. The Palestinians don't have a state. They want one. And as President Bush told them in a very good speech he made in January of 2008 in Jerusalem to both Palestinian and Israeli leaders, the Israelis are not going to get security until the Palestinians get a state. And the Palestinians are not going to get a state until the people of Israel have reasonable and sustainable security. So each should be vested in the other's interest. And I think sooner or later, both societies are going to come to that realization and move forward.
Let's listen to some of President Trump speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos. And he accused the Palestinians of disrespecting the U.S. by refusing to meet with Vice President Pence on his recent visit to the Middle East. And the president threatened to withhold more aid to the Palestinians. Here he is.
And we give them hundreds of millions of dollars in aid and support, tremendous numbers, numbers that nobody understands. That money is on the table, and that money's not going to them unless they sit down and negotiate peace.
George Mitchell, what do you think of that?
I don't think it'll work. In both my tours of duty in the Middle East, both sides offered that as the way to solve the problem. The Palestinians and all of the Arabs said, oh, the Israelis are dependent upon you. If you just cut off their funding, they'll do whatever you want. And the Israelis said, the Palestinians are dependent upon you. If you just cut off their funding, they'll do what you want. I don't believe it will work in either case. Both are proud people. They have their own sense of identity and mission. And I think the way to get them to negotiation is to create incentives, not through threats and cutting off aid. And might I point out, the principal victims of a cutoff of aid will, of course, be Palestinians. There'll be tremendous hunger, suffering among Palestinians over a long period of time. But a secondary effect will be tremendously adverse to Israel. A complete cutoff of assistance to the Palestinians means that effectively that burden will fall on the Israelis, which they really don't need or want. And so I think it's an unwise strategy. Maybe it'll work. The Palestinians are obviously in a very desperate condition. But I've never believed that this kind of threat or cutoff, particularly to people who we have heretofore regarded as people that we support in their aspiration, that I think does remain American policy. I just don't think those kinds of tactics work. Maybe they will. We'll have to see down the road.
Well, why do you think President Trump is willing to take that risk?
I don't think he sees it as a risk. I think that his
You think he thinks he'll get everything he wants?
I have no way of knowing that. You'd have to ask him that. But, you know, the principal beneficiaries of the president's decision were those both among Palestinians and Israelis who don't favor a two-state solution. The right wing in Israel, well represented in the current government, openly and aggressively advocates there never being a Palestinian state on the West Bank. And many of them advocate the complete annexation of all of the West Bank by Israel. So they're very pleased and emboldened by the president's statement. On the Palestinian side, they're divided too. Those who support the Palestinian Authority and President Abbas oppose violence, recognize Israel, want to reach an agreement. The others, Hamas, led by Hamas, are opposed to Israel's existence, want to use violence, and they're very emboldened by this. So what it has done is emboldened the groups on both sides who are opposed to any two-state solution, and I think the only possible solution to end the conflict is through two states. So I think it's a setback, and a setback for American policy. This has been American policy for quite a long time.
Do you think the U.S. has lost credibility as a party that could possibly negotiate peace in the Middle East?
Well, that's certainly true among the Palestinians, the Arabs, and the broader Muslim community. Keep in mind that now about 1 out of 5 persons on earth is Muslim, and by the year 2050, it'll be 1 out of 3.
Right.
There'll then be about 3.5 billion Muslims in the world, and I think clearly we've lost ground there. But I don't think that's irretrievable. I think they all know and recognize that there cannot be an agreement without the active support and participation of the United States government, because there is no other entity, government or otherwise, that can create the conditions and do what's necessary to keep compliance with any agreement.
As we mentioned, you also helped negotiate the peace accord in Northern Ireland. I want to ask you about that. As the UK breaks away from the European Union, there is concern now about what will happen to the now open border between Ireland's north and south. Are you concerned that Brexit could undermine peace in Ireland?
Yes, I am. I think the damage goes far beyond that, though. Brexit was a decision democratically taken by free people in a democratic society and must be respected for that reason. But my own view and that of many others, that it's a profound mistake. The potential for disrupting the peace process in Northern Ireland exists if there is a remilitarization of the border and the ease with which people now move back and forth, which has been so important in reducing stereotypes and demonization and encouraging trade and movement of people across the border, if that ends. But the damage goes far beyond that. The economy of the Republic of Ireland is deeply integrated into that of the United Kingdom. And if Ireland remains part of the European Union and they don't get a special provision in the treaty between the UK and the European countries, the Irish economy would be damaged, I think, more than that of the United Kingdom. And that of the United Kingdom, I think, is also going to be damaged, depending on the nature of the agreement that occurs. So I hope very much that both the UK government and the European Union governments will not try to refight the battle of Brexit. That was decided by the people of the United Kingdom, but try to figure out a way to maintain some status for the UK in terms of trade, movement of people that will minimize the adverse effects both to the UK, which includes Northern Ireland, and to the Republic of Ireland itself.
I want to ask you one more question. You were the Senate Majority Leader as a Democrat. Do you think that the future of the Democratic Party should be on the left side or more as a centrist party? Because as you know, there's a major debate going on in the party right now about where to go forward.
I'm not a labels guy. I like to deal with issues. I think the Democratic Party has a very strong and bright future if we concentrate on those principles, those policies, and those actions which created such strong support for Democrats over the past century, and that is concentrating on economic growth, job creation, working men and women, many of whom feel we have forgotten them. And that's got to be the emphasis. I believe this to the bottom of my heart, that the single most important agency in United States history in opening up doors of opportunity, reducing, breaking down barriers to people moving ahead, getting education and skills, has been the Democratic Party and the policies that it has pursued. And we've got to get back to that kind of basic. And when we do that, we will prevail in elections and be doing the right thing for the American people.
Are you running in 2020?
No, thanks very much for asking.
That's George Mitchell, former U.S. Senator, Senate Majority Leader, and Special Envoy to Northern Ireland under President Clinton and to the Middle East under President Obama. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.